Hi, everyone, and welcome to Val Talks Pets, the forum for pet parents and enthusiasts alike. Having been in the pet industry for over 10 years now, I'm going to share with you issues and questions that arise as I work with pet parents on a day-to-day basis. I am not a veterinarian, but I do have certifications in canine, feline, small animal, fish and herptile, and avian health and nutrition from the University of California, Davis Extension. Hi, everyone, and thanks for joining me on this episode of Val Talks Pets. Have you ever wondered what your cat was being vaccinated for? I have. So together, let's go on an exploration of cat vaccines and find out. Let's start with how a vaccine actually works. According to vcaanimalhospitals.com, vaccines work by stimulating the body's immune system to recognize and fight a particular microorganism, such as a virus, bacteria, or other infectious organisms. As we know with human vaccines, the idea is to trick the immune system into thinking it knows this invader and therefore is geared up to fight it if it enters the system. Now, as VCA points out, while a vaccine can prevent illness, it cannot block microorganisms from getting into the body. This means that sometimes a cat may not look sick, thanks to the vaccine, but the cat can still spread the invading microorganisms to other cats. Now, VCA sets out for us the three major types of vaccines. They are modified live vaccines, killed inactivated vaccines, and subunit vaccines. Modified live vaccines contain live organisms that are weakened or genetically modified, so they will not produce disease, but will multiply in the cat's body. Live vaccines induce a stronger, longer-lasting immunity than inactivated vaccines. Killed inactivated vaccines are prepared using actual organisms or genetically modified organisms that have been killed by various treatments. Because these vaccines are not as strong, they may be an added ingredient to boost. Subunit vaccines are more commonly called recombinant DNA vaccines. They are vaccines in which the infectious organism has been broken apart and only certain parts are included in the vaccine. Either way, most vaccines are given by a needle. There are a few that go in by drops in the nose, but most are the jab. When you take your cat into the vet for their shots, the vet will administer what is called core vaccines. These are the ones recommended for kittens and adult cats. The non-core vaccines are optional and are chosen based on the cat's risk to the specific types of disease. The core vaccines are as follow: feline panleukopenia, feline viral rhinotracheitis, also known as herpes virus type 1, FHV1, feline coliseal virus, rabies virus, and feline leukemia virus, FELV. The non-core vaccines are chlamydophila, bordetella bronchioseptica, feline leukemia in adult cats. So let's start with the core vaccines and determine what these are. Number one, feline panleukopenia virus. According to MerckVetManual.com, feline panleukopenia is a highly contagious, often fatal, viral disease of cats seen worldwide. Kittens are affected most severely. FPV is a parvoviral infectious disease characterized by depression, anorexia, high fever, vomiting, diarrhea, and consequent severe dehydration. Adult cats are much less often affected. So feline panleukopenia is a parvovirus, so it is often called the feline distemper, like we see in dogs. Basically, the virus attacks the white blood cells and therefore attacks the cat's immune system. The virus is easily passed through feces. It is important that if you are getting a kitten from a rescue, you inquire as to whether the kitten has been tested for FPV and or vaccinated. If you find a kitten, you should take it to the vet for testing and the vaccines. If you are adopting an adult cat, the same questions should apply, and you should speak to your vet about the vaccine for FPV for an adult cat. Number 2, feline viral rhinotracheitis, also known as herpes virus type 1, FHV1. FHV1 is caused by feline herpes virus type 1. Because this virus is species specific, it only affects cats and cats of all ages. So as VCA hospitals point out, FVR is a major cause of upper respiratory disease in cats and is the most common cause of conjunctivitis, inflammation of the tissues surrounding the eye, especially the lining of the lids and the third eyelid. There are photos online of cats with FVR with their poor little eyes all red and swollen. The poor wee things look so miserable. FVR is spread in saliva and discharges from the eyes and nose of infected cats. What is rather concerning about FVR is that the transmission with an infected cat is not the only way for a cat to get the virus. As VCA explains, if an infected cat were to be on clothing, furniture, or near food and water dishes, the viral particles can contaminate these items and create spread. The virus, depending on the surface, can live for anywhere from a half an hour to 18 hours. Once a cat has been infected with FVR, it will usually show disease symptoms in 2 to 5 days. That's the incubation period of the disease. The cat can infect other cats during this incubation period once symptoms appear. The active infection will last about 10 to 20 days. Alrighty, number 3, feline Kulisi virus. So according to Wikipedia, FCV is a virus of the family Calicerviida that causes disease in cats. It is one of the 2 important viral causes of respiratory infection in cats. Basically, a cat will present with the typical upper respiratory infection symptoms. The poor little guys will have sneezing and discharge from their eyes and nose, feeling pretty under the weather. As VCA points out, this can also be accompanied with ulcers on the tongue, hard palate, gums, lips, or nose. These cats will usually salivate or drool excessively as the ulcers are very painful. Basically, this virus is highly contagious, spread through sneezing, saliva, feces, or urine. The virus may survive for up to 1 week in a contaminated environment, and possibly longer in a cool, damp location. So this is one of those viruses that can run through shelters and rescues very easily because all it takes is one cat to come in either in the incubation period or in full symptoms for the virus to take hold with everyone. treating with antibacterial drugs will only address possible secondary bacterial infections. So most cats will receive eye medication for discharge and possibly an anti-inflammatory, but then they just have to ride it out with TLC. The best approach is to isolate the cat with symptoms and do a thorough disinfection of everything. Number 4 is rabies. Rabies is 100% fatal and is transmitted through saliva from an infected animal by a bite. We know that raccoons, skunks, foxes, bats, porcupines, but they are more at a risk of being quilled than bitten, and possibly coyotes. It really depends what wild animals your cat could be exposed to. The rabies vaccine is usually given to kittens at 3 to 4 months of age. Rabies is given every 3 years to cats. The 3-year vaccine is non-adjuvanted. I have also had my work cat vaccinated with a 5-year vaccine. If the cost is a bit pricey to do the longer period vaccine, you can always opt for the yearly, which will be less expensive. The argument for getting and not getting an indoor cat vaccinated for rabies is as follows. Many pet parents believe that vaccinating for rabies for an indoor cat is relatively useless, as they are indoor and do not interact with wildlife. The argument against this, as pointed out by PetMD.com, is that there is always the possibility that your cat could escape and be outside exposed to wildlife, or a wild animal could come into your home, or a bat could get in and the cat goes after it. Well, I'll tell you a bat story. We were fostering Tundra at this time, so before adoption, and one night I noticed something moving in the fireplace. Well, of course, it was a bat. The cats noticed it and started staring at it through inside the glass. The bat secured itself in a corner of the fireplace and hunkered down for, I don't know what he thought. I had done this before, where I put a container at the bottom of the glass doors and pushed it up against a vent that I opened. I secured the container and voila, in the morning, Mr. Bat was in the container. I slipped a lid over the container and took him outside. I figured I would do the same this time. The cats sat in vigil, taking turns, and Tundra just ignored the whole thing. Sometime in the middle of the night, Tundra came into the bedroom, kind of walking around the bed and looking at us. At this time, he never came into the bedroom, so we were a little surprised. Anyway, he left, and that was it. In the morning, however, guess who had escaped the fireplace was at the top of the ceiling. Anyway, with a towel and a broom, we got Mr. Bat outside, no problem. But obviously, the little midnight visit by Tundra was him coming in to tell us that that thing in the fireplace is out, and those cats are doing nothing. I guess in the long run, it was good that they gave up vigil and went to their beds instead of a full-out cat-bat brawl, which would have not been good. If you acquire a stray cat, it is best to head to the vet and discuss how to proceed with the vaccine and get the information about what shots the cat has had if you adopt from a shelter or rescue. So last of the core vaccines is feline leukemia virus, feline LV. According to Wikipedia, the feline LV is a retrovirus that infects cats. It can be transmitted from infected cats when the transfer of saliva or nasal secretions is involved. If not defeated by the animal's immune system, the virus weakens the cat's immune system, which can lead to diseases which can be lethal. Because feline leukemia is cat-to-cat contagious, FELV-positive cats should only live with other FELV-positive cats. So according to vet.com, Cornell.education, a cat with FELV has a median survival time of 2.5 years. Now, this, of course, varies. So feline leukemia is a rather odd disease, I'd say. As the College of Veterinary Medicine Cornell discusses, when a cat is exposed to FELV, in some instances, a cat can mount an effective immune response against the virus and completely eliminate it before the virus becomes incorporated into the cat's genome. About 30 to 40% of cats have a partially effective immune response following exposure to the virus and develop a regressive infection. While a cat has a regressive infection, it cannot actively infect other cats with the disease, and it is unlikely to experience clinical signs from FELV. However, it is possible for the virus to reactivate and start replicating again, especially if the cat becomes immunosuppressed through illness or medications. When this happens, the cat is again infectious to other cats and at risk of developing clinical illness. A cat that has FELV is more prone to cancer and other infections. We had a work cat that was found as a stray. She was beautiful. A rescue person found her and thought she would be a good fit for us. She was. We were told she was spayed. Well, she went into full-blown heat, and so, no, she was not spayed. After the heat settled down, I took her for spaying. She ended up staying an extra night at the vet because her spay was so difficult. Her uterus was full of fibroids, and she needed observation. We were told to come and get her the next day, as she was doing fine. I picked her up and took her back to work. She wasn't home an hour before she started wobbling and collapsed on the floor. I took her back immediately. They hooked her up to fluids, etc., and kept her another day and night. She came back and she seemed to be fine, tired, but that was to be expected. However, I always thought something was not right. The vet never seemed to have any answers for what happened, and I thought that to be rather curious as well. She would also have bouts where she had a fever and would sleep for a full day and not really eat. Then one day, she wobbled and collapsed, panting and in real distress. The vet that I had changed to was away, so I went to the clinic that was covering. They were very good. They wanted to take some blood and see what was going on, so I said I would be in the area not far, so just call me. I wasn't gone 10 minutes, and they said all hell had broken loose, and she was bleeding out and basically crashing. I rushed back. They took her blood. That was it. It just started gushing out, and that's when everything fell apart. The test came back that she had just about no red blood cells in her blood. Leukemia. There was no choice at this point. So she's in my pet cemetery and received a toast from all the staff who came to bury her. I always felt there was a red flag about the spay and the bouts of fevers. I just knew she was immunocompromised. So these are the core vaccines a cat will get when you go into the vet. There are some non-core vaccines, and they are feline chlamydophila, which causes feline chlamydiosis. So chlamydophila is a primary conjunctive pathogen that involves the eye with conjunctivitis and sneezing and nasal discharge. Young cats and kittens are susceptible, but cats of all ages can contract this. This is another one of those discharge sneezy infections that is a risk for multiple cat homes or rescues and shelters. Feline bordetellosis is another highly contagious disease caused by the bacteria Bordetella bronchiseptica. This one can transmit between dogs and cats, mostly through licking and nuzzling. Again, sneezing, discharge, coughing, and possibly retching are symptoms. At risk are shelter, rescues, breeding kennels, etc. Feline leukemia vaccine for adult cats is not considered a core vaccine, but for cats that venture outside, it is recommended. And last but not least, let's discuss FIP. Feline infectious peritonitis, known as FIP, is a viral disease of cats caused by certain strains of a virus called the feline coronavirus. Sound a bit familiar? According to Cornell University, most strains of feline coronavirus are found in the gastrointestinal tract and do not cause significant disease. Cats infected usually do not show any symptoms during the initial viral infections, but may occasionally experience brief bouts of diarrhea and/or mild upper respiratory signs from which they recover spontaneously. The most common transmission of FIP is believed to occur when an infected mother cat passes along the virus to her kittens, usually when the kittens are between 5 and 8 weeks of age. Cats housed in high-density facilities appear to be more susceptible to the development of FIP, as are purebred cats, male cats, and geriatric cats, for reasons that remain unclear. There is only one licensed FIP vaccine available, but this vaccine has questionable effectiveness. If FIP is a concern, you will need to consult with your veterinarian. Well, there you have it. Cats can be protected from several diseases that may come their way, and you can always have your veterinarian go over the core vaccines with you and discuss any of the non-core vaccines. Overvaccination is a concern, so it is best to have a thorough discussion with your vet and do some homework as well, so you can make an informed decision and at the very least know what you are protecting your cat against. Because, as I say, knowing is caring. Thank you for listening to Val Talks Pets. Please remember to follow or subscribe to ensure that you never miss an episode. To really help the show and to make it easier for others to find, please rate and review each episode that you find interesting and helpful. And don't forget that you can also email me at val@valtalkspets.com with topics you would like me to address or with any questions you may have. Also, check out my website at valtalkspets.com and let me know what you think and how we can improve upon it. Thanks for caring!